Well, before we get started with Kim Eppenheimer from the Friendship House, I do want to make one quick announcement, just because I think it's funny. In the conversation I had with Reverend Burke, I mentioned Saron Cade, who was going to be the chief of staff for the incoming Mayor Markell. I'm going to keep calling him Mayor Markell because I know it just gets at him. And he can ignore me. He can arrest my friends, have his Praetorian guard arrest my friends, but it's fine. Mayor Markell. And I mentioned that, you know, Saron Cade was not a good guy. I said he tried to take away pensioners' health care and privatize it, all this stuff. And just so happens that Saron Cade has been arrested on multiple shoplifting attempts, I guess. So allegedly, let's just say all of us here in the bunker had a nice laugh about it. In the shadow of Rockford Tower, behind enemy lines, in the belly of the Delaware Way Beast. This is Rob. This is the Highlands Bunker Podcast. Hello. There's a big absence right now. We haven't gotten a hold of him in about a week. Kay Foster Stomberg is missing. I don't know whether it's job abandonment or he's gone dark for some reason. No, I'm just kidding. He can't be here today. But joining us today in basically a continuation of sort of last week's story is the executive director of the Friendship House, Kim Eppenheimer. Hello.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
So how did this morning go? How did that go? We were talking before we turned the microphones on about something Michael Kalmbach, our friend and comrade, used to sort of train me to do. And when you do this kind of work, it's sort of like you just take the day in chunks and you're like, well, how did it go for lunchtime?
Yes.
So how's it going today?
Today it is going fine. It is not bitterly cold, which is a blessing as we're hitting the holiday season, but we're already gearing up for very cold weather this weekend. So we are on a day-by-day basis making sure that we're doing the best for our folks in our community.
So first question is always the important one. How did you find yourself doing this kind of work and doing sort of public services like this? And then also, maybe you can brag a little bit about the Friendship House, what it does, how long it's done it, what kind of programs and services are available, and how you guys work.
Yeah, well, give me the out to talk about Friendship House. I choose that over me any day of the week. But a very quick history. I stumbled across Friendship House by volunteering over 10 years ago. And I fell in love with the mission and the model of how the organization functions and inquired if by any chance they were hiring, because I was looking to get back into the workforce after being home with the kids and really doing various consultant work. And they were hiring for a part-time volunteer coordinator. So I very happily took that position and we fell in love with each other. And the current executive director had announced his retirement, and he was the first and longest standing executive director for the organization. And so I was encouraged to put my hat in the ring for that job, and I was selected by the board, and that was 7 years ago. So it's been a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to be in this. I say it's the best job I've ever had, and I feel really, really fortunate and quite lucky to be able to do this as my career. Friendship House has been around for almost 40 years now, which is amazing. And we work with people who are experiencing various forms of homelessness, whether they're actively unhoused or they're on the brink of losing their housing or they're on the journey to be more self-sufficient and more stable in their current situation. And we end up working with close to 14,000 people every year. And you think about our state, that really is quite a large number, knowing that's only a portion of folks who need our assistance.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually, when you said that number, I kind of perked up. I'm like, did you say 14,000? I mean, because I don't know what the population of Newark is or Dover. I mean, even just Wilmington, it's like a quarter of the population of Wilmington.
Right.
That's just an amazing number for the context that you're talking about.
That's right. So we have several programs that do that, and I'll kind of keep it at a high level because I could spend the entire time just going through all the services that we do. But The most important thing is that we meet people where they are, meaning we really spend time listening to someone's journey and where they want to be. And then we work on breaking down the barriers that are in their way. So if somebody is, say they are unhoused and they can't afford to get a state ID or a birth certificate, which are required for housing and employment, then we help with that difficult task and we cover the cost of it. If they have a legal fine or fee that's holding them back, we can help pay that down. We also have a massive clothing bank that gives out clothing free to the community and employs women who are actively incarcerated. So we can help guide them through that process of going from incarceration to being out of incarceration. And we have transitional housing, which people can come to out of an active program that essentially times out and they've ended their time there because most programs are pretty short. And so they can come to us to keep doing their journey. In Wilmington, we're known for both of those programs, but we're probably largely known for our Wilmington Empowerment Center, which can serve about 3,500 people a year. And about 10% or less of those are actively unhoused folks who just need to know they have a place that they can be. They might need bathroom access, charge their phone, access to checking email so they can really stay connected to their community. They might just want water or coffee, clothing, some things that we can really take for granted that we just wake up with. We serve and give to them every day.
Yeah, it's amazing the different types of services that are running through, you know, sort of a small organization in a small place, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think, again, this is important work, but what it is sort of plugging holes in the dike, you know,
yeah.
If you this or that or the other, the idea that the, in the interest of the state or the city, or big business and capital, people aren't treated well, but then you have to go and cover fines and fees that they have, mm-hmm. or you have to go and cover, you know, a state ID. Well, that's the state. I mean, Why are you filling that gap? You know, no offense.
No, I know, but, absolutely. You know, no one else is, right?
But it's really, I think it's important to sort of like point out that this civil secular government has left people scrambling in sort of emergency triage sort of situations.
Yeah.
And luckily we have some heroes out there doing it, but it's really, it's indicative of a systemic problem that I think ought to be said out loud.
Yes, I agree. I think the state has a lot of choices. And one of the things that Delaware has notoriously done is give the services out for proposal to nonprofits to help do because they feel they're the experts. And while there's a lot of truth to that, it also relieves the state from having to take on a lot of responsibility and leaves it up to the nonprofits. So Friendship House, for example, doesn't rely on government contracts. So we fill the gaps for where the government doesn't see it being critical, state IDs being an example. So if they're not seeing that's a need and they're not putting out a request for proposal for an organization to take care of that, or they're not willing to offer it on their own, we see that as a critical need we have to step in to do.
Yeah, it's called a state ID.
It
and
is.
It's run by the office who wants you to be have identification. It's called the state. It's the state ID. And the idea that that the state doesn't feel that that's a something that they should be getting on top of. Again, it's just, I'm just pointing it out. That's all. It's very telling. We'll just say that. So I guess this will be the biggest chunk because this is sort of an ongoing sort of situation.
Mm-hmm.
Reverend Burke told the story of basically his interaction with the Wilmington police as it has been over the year that he's been here, and then the incident with the benches and the sweep last month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You've obviously been 7 years as the head there. Is that right? So 7 years. So you must
as
have
CEO,
had.
Yeah.
You must have had more sort of history or interaction, I'm guessing, with the Wilmington police. So, yeah, just, I guess in summary, what was your, how has your interaction been going into this? Because I'll put it this way, you've been there through the ejection of Creative Vision Factory.
Yes.
You've been there through the really the building of most of the new development in, I'm going to do quotes, West Center City.
Yeah.
It's the fake West Center City.
Yep.
Neighborhood. So you've actually spent a time where you could sort of see this building too, a sort of like a combat could. I guess you kind of saw this coming, didn't you?
To be fair, no.
Really?
I was really surprised at this. I guess surprise isn't quite the right word. Disappointed's the best word. Deeply disappointed. Because we've actually had a relatively good relationship working with the Wilmington Police Department, and largely because we've always been needed. And they use us appropriately when they have somebody, when it's really hot or really cold and they don't have anywhere else for that person to go, they know we're an open door. And whenever we've had issues with somebody's, you know, mental health has gotten too severe, or someone's having a health crisis, we're having an overdose happen in our center, they respond, and they've always done that, and they've been respectful, and they've helped us when we've needed it. I think the tension that's been building has more to do with what's been happening in the city and the transformation of really getting it into a business and living town in a way that it hasn't been for some time. And I think the way I've described it is it feels like a shrinking city to those that are either unhoused or in a poverty situation. They're not welcomed. They're not wanted. And that's happening at the same time where we're seeing an increase of overdoses and substance abuse. And we're seeing mental health hit a new crisis. So when you think about all of that, the Wilmington police are now asked and forced into doing a lot more because they're getting more calls, because there's more people living and working there who don't want to see it or don't know what to do when they see someone in crisis. Their instinct is call the police. And I think they're really frustrated. Because not only are they being asked to do an impossible thing, which is to fix a person who doesn't have a lot of options for them in front of them, but they don't have their own options to send somebody, and they're being asked to help a person. And so the bigger issue is we have got to figure out a way to have a healthier system and more options for people and more resources, not depend on the police to solve it.
I think that's fair. And generally correct. That we just talked about it even in the answer before. There's a deficiency, there's a systemic deficiency, and people are yelling, I don't want to see this, which is, I mean, they are saying that. It's gross, but that's what they're saying. And the police don't have, they're called, and they don't have the tools for this. I'm good that far. I guess the issue then becomes, if you're a street cop, or even a cop that's running sort of this, whatever they're doing, along with caseworkers and stuff, and you feel frustrated that you're in this situation and you're being asked to do this, you're taking it out on the people there. That's mm-hmm. the problem. What you should be doing is demanding of the mayor and the governor the help that we've been asking for decades, really, and especially since COVID and especially since the opioid crisis. So it's like, I'm good with that explanation up to a point. And if you're feeling frustrated and you're going to lash out because you shouldn't be asked to solve this societal problem, you're correct. But lash out against the powerful people who actually have the tools in their toolkit to fix it, but they don't want to. Mm-hmm. They're leaving it on you. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, direct your ire in the proper direction, I guess I would say.
Well, I think the other big challenge is the overall culture that we see with police departments. I think what they don't have the ability to do if they want it is to then advocate, right? So I think there's a sense of I'm in a role and I need to perform and I have these specific expectations. And I think in general, there's a concept that they're limited where it's hard for them to then say, hey, we're seeing this deficiency. We want to see change. We want to turn to the mayor or the chief, but that'd be going against their hierarchy. And we don't see that that's allowed in police departments, right? There's a rule and order and follow suit. And so if they do see change or demand for change, then they might be isolated and considered to be somebody who's unruly or not one of the team.
Yeah, it's a weird. And again, you saying the police culture actually gave me like a Tucson flashback, because that was you and I attended the Civilian
right.
Oversight Conference. I thought it was great, actually, the Cole Conference. And it was a lot of conversations, no matter where they started, sort of ended in this culture question. And I think that that's true. And I don't even know if it's a hierarchy thing. It's sort of like, okay, we train you to be sort of on a hair trigger, really. And you gotta stay on top of every situation, even if it means that you're overbearing and you use violence and all of this kind of stuff. And so we're not asking you to find these problems. We're just sending you out to clean it up. Like, we're not asking you to come back and tell us what we're... Mm-hmm. That's what the cultural part of it, I think.
Yeah.
It's not even necessarily hierarchy. There's no even thought that somebody could walk in and be like, hey, you know, we could probably kind of do this a little bit differently. We don't have to do it this way. That's what the culture is. We're not hiring creative people. People know what I think we're hiring. We're hiring blockheads and doofuses and people who like to shoot
guns.
You
know how I feel about name calling.
I know. Here we go. We're going. Kim's taking us back to regular order. We're back to regular order. I have to be recognized or I can't speak. We'll get to the PAB stuff in a minute. But yeah, I just think it definitely is a culture thing. It's like we throw our hands up and say, we're doing it wrong. We're not supposed, we shouldn't be sending the cops. We don't have the right programs and funding. Well, then just do it. You're the people. You're the mayor. You're used to be the governor. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've taken this demotion. Try to do something now.
No one's taking accountability, and it's very, very frustrating. It does feel to me that those that can make change tend to take the road that feels a little bit easier or is going to please the people who have more wealth. And I think we have a habit of, and maybe it's unfair, but I feel like we have a habit of connecting wealth to value. And when you look at the city of Wilmington, it certainly feels that way. There are choices to be made. And I feel like the choices they're making feel like they're slightly easier, right? Putting in new businesses, putting up more apartment complexes, making the city feel more livable for those that aren't used to living in a city. And it's really unfair to those who already call the city home and don't have a place to live.
Yeah, I mean, I think I told Patrick last week, I'm a Wilmingtonian. I was born here, went to St. Anthony's, my family's from here, all that stuff. And so, like, I'm not interested in having a Potamkin village that's going to, have Zoomers that have just left the house at 26, and they don't want to see, like, the city. I'm not interested in that. Nobody asked me. So, you know, I think that these conversations need to start happening in a clearer, more forceful tone.
Yes.
Put it that way. See that?
Yes, I like that.
I do have to ask you, I don't want to have to ask you to sort of give us a sort of a TikTok of what happened the day the benches came down. But I do want to ask you a specific question because Nurse Susan, my wife, heard the conversation that I had with Patrick, and he mentioned that once they came back with the truck and cut the benches out of the sidewalk, they came in and asked you whether you wanted them thrown in the hallway. I wasn't really shocked by that because I was like, yeah, I mean, that's what they're going to do. My wife was like, how disrespectful and garbage was that? But were you there when this happened? And what was your take when they came in after all of this to ask you if you wanted them thrown in your hallway?
Yeah, I was not there physically. I was getting calls from staff, both at the church and at our center, trying to manage the situation. And it really caught me so off guard because I wasn't sure who was asking for what exactly, you know? And I was being asked for clarification on who owns the benches. And I'm like, I need to figure this out. And do you want the benches? Yes. Will the police want to remove them? That doesn't make sense. And why? There's a lot here. I felt very caught off guard in that moment. So I actually wasn't told right then and there what they were offering to do with the benches. It was after the fact when we were able to really piece everything together, hear the story from multiple angles, when that was said to me that they offered to leave them on site, was the way it was said to me, or take them away and keep them in storage or throw them away. And I have to give credit to our staff as well, because their instincts also are to try to make space for all, right? They're not there to be adversarial. and they are there to advocate for our folks, but they tried very hard to make sure that they were paying attention to what the police were saying, trying to figure out why this was happening. And they were not prepared for this either. So I think our instinct was, if you're going to take them, take them. But we need to understand why. And they couldn't tell us in that moment why.
Speaking of the why, I think Patrick mentioned, and he might have mentioned this at, you know, sort of offhanded. I don't know if it's true. But subsequently, through your interactions around that time, there was more information about what the complaints, and again, I'm doing air quotes if anybody can't, or nobody can see them, what the complaints may have been, and sort of what more specific sort of calls were made. Did you get any subsequently any more specifics on what that was?
No, it really just came down to the, you know, they're saying that there's increased substance abuse and drug using in that area, and the term prostitution came up quite a bit. That's happening, you know, the way I heard it was they're saying it's happening because the benches are there. You know, they're happening on the benches, so therefore we need to remove the benches, which is ludicrous.
Yeah, that's just, again, we're going to go back to, you know, we're not sending our best over there. They're not making really cogent arguments, but again, we're in regular order.
Well, the thing I find interesting is I understand that a lieutenant was the one that did it. That's pretty high up on the chain.
Yeah. I mean, somebody has to basically just make the decision that they don't care. I mean, I'm not surprised that that happened. You know, again, this is why we sort of started the conversation this way. When I started getting information and it happened and I sort of got in on the sort of going down and trying to just help or do journalism or whatever the hell I was trying to do down there, all of it seemed so perfectly understandable. Like, I wasn't like, wow, I can't believe they're doing this. I'm like, oh, yeah, this is what they do. Mm. You know, they roll up. You know, they look at it like a, I didn't read Mayor Przycki's response to the letter that that was sent and signed by so many of our friends and comrades. But I did get some highlights, and it's just some of the most disgusting stuff.
Yes.
It's like, oh, it smells like urine. Or, oh, I can't believe you would libel our great boys, our boys in blue, our young sons. You know, it's just like, it's so weird. I feel like I'm in another planet. It feels like it comes from another planet.
I wish I could say that. This is the norm in so many ways, Rob. It's so difficult. Because you, and when I say you, I guess I mean me, put in so much hope that we have come away from this concept of the good old boys and the boys club, and the men in blue are going to, you know, come in and save the day. And you know what? Sometimes they do, and sometimes the women in blue do as well. It is a little too normal for me to think it's from another planet. And I recognize it's from here.
Yeah, I mean, I recognize it's from here. It's just so blatantly, and I guess, again, it's a cultural thing. People don't really give it too much thought. They're like, oh, if something happens, I call the police, and I'm not really privy to, or anything that's done is sort of done outside of my field of vision, so I don't really know what's going on. And so, yeah, I mean, in that sense, I understand what's happening. I understand everybody loves their large adult sons and daughters who go out and strapped and, you know, the crackheads out there. People like that stuff. And one of the reasons this podcast is called the Highlands Bunker, and because we're in the Highlands, and it's, you know, these are some of the worst people in the city. We just found that out in the SD1 special election process. We'll have more about that next week. But yeah, so in that regard, I guess I understand it. And that's kind of how I started saying it. Like, I can comprehend exactly why this is happening. It's just, from a regular human perspective, extremely bizarre.
It's so disappointing. And, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, but being a female in this world, it just is another, I feel like, a slap in the face of, we refuse to move on. We refuse to accept that every single person in this country and in this world is deserving of the same level of dignity that people want to give to themselves. It is a very throw in the face to me that the mayor is not willing to see the issues that he has created in the city.
Yes, I think that that's perfectly put. But I'd like to take a little bit of time in the middle here to ask you sort of a question before we get on to the police stuff. That seemed like it was going to be a good...
Wait, aren't we on the police stuff?
Well, that's what I was going to say. That seemed like a good segue into sort of the Police Accountability Board stuff, too. But before we do that, this is more relevant to your day job, I think. I know Sophie Phillips was championing and sponsoring an unhoused Bill of Rights. That's like, just to let you know, that's about as far as I know. That's what I know. Anybody who doesn't like it, I make fun of them just reactively because I know it's probably a good bill. I have no idea what's in it. I don't know what the status of it is. I don't know if it's been filed. So can you tell me what the Representative Sophie Phillips, what her Bill of Rights is, where it is in the process, and how it would work?
I can't answer all of that,
okay.
But I can share that it's been broken up into pieces, and I believe there's two pieces that either have passed or on the floor. They will be entered into the floor to be passed. I think what I find a little jarring is that it's needed. It shouldn't be needed because every single person who is unhoused already falls under all of the other laws that protect every single human. So the fact that we feel a need to have a homeless Bill of Rights is frustrating because that means that people aren't being held accountable for laws they are potentially breaking by discriminating someone who is unhoused. And I think it's great, and it just warms my heart that Sophie has taken this on and it means so much to her. I wish that we could use the laws that are there and enforce them instead of finding more laws to add on top to try to correct laws that aren't being enforced, because it makes it harder and messier for those that actually have to enforce those existing laws. I think it muddies the water some. So I think it's sad that it's so needed, and it is needed because the unhoused population is discriminated against and treated poorly every day, and it is not okay.
Yeah, and I guess one of the reasons I always frame it like that is because I think the bigger issue is what you just said. I'm somebody who, like you, is like, no, we need less laws. We have too many laws. You see somebody gets charged with 9 things for doing one thing, and you're like, why do we have so many laws? It's dead to one thing.
Right.
So, all of that's bad. But what this is doing is bringing to the forefront, into the discourse, the idea that, can you imagine how ridiculous it must have gotten for us to have to write these new laws so you treat human beings like human beings?
Correct.
Like, you can see where we are now? Like... Let's do a little reflection of why we're doing mm-hmm. this, I have to make this first announcement to my almost newly elected state senator Tom Cruz, vote for this. If you don't, I mean, we're gonna vote you out next time anyway. So I'm being a little bit disingenuous because you're gonna have a nice, like, it's not gonna last very long. You and Ray Siegfried are gonna be shown the fucking door. But vote, at least vote for this Sophie Phillips thing. So you'll go through easier. Like, you won't hear every day me making fun of you and insulting you, calling you names, probably going down to Dover and hassling you, like Hall and all of that, and calling you Tom Cruise, like all that stuff. We don't have to go through that. Just make good votes, and then when we vote you out, just go quietly and don't cry like Ray Siegfried. Thank you. Sorry. That's a little bit of a preview of what you're going to get when we actually do the SD1, SD5 show. So nice. Just a little preview.
But yes, I agree. Vote for it.
Yes. Okay. Police Accountability Board stuff. We first met each other about a year ago. We went to have lunch because somebody said, you got to meet Kim from Friendship House. I was like, okay, let's do it.
I hope I didn't disappoint.
It was, again, how could you disappoint? Because literally a month later, what do I find out? Oh. Kim's on the Newcastle County Police Accountability Board. Oh, great. Well, on April, we go to the first, Kevin goes, we go to the thing. Oh, who gets voted the chair of the Newcastle County Police Accountability Board? Kim. I was like, this, you're in the ascendancy.
I feel like I was voluntold on that one, but yeah.
so you applied and were placed and then voted as the chair of the Newcastle County Police Accountability Board. I have some probing questions on that, but first I'll just let you comment on sort of like what attracted you to it and what you're trying to get out of it.
I'm not sure that I can say what attracted me to it more than I felt it was an opportunity to really learn and make change. What I'm hoping to get out of it, though, is really, you know, to put it bluntly, to not let happen what's happening in Wilmington. We've got to find ways to bridge these gaps between what is being expected of the police versus what is being done by the police and what is really needed and wanted by the community. And I think I don't have lofty ideas or expectations that we're going to make a lot of changes at the level of the police. They're very open. They want to listen. But I think change is really, really hard. But if anything else, what I'm really hoping is that we bring to light what's needed. And I think, as we already said earlier, what's needed is the system needs to change. And the approach to working with people who have the need for services has to change. And I think, if anything else, this might actually help see that, so people can see we should not call the police if we see an unhoused person sitting on a bench. Maybe there's another option. And so there's a learning education that can be done on both ends.
Yeah, I was, you know, obviously we've mentioned it here, the Newcastle County Police Accountability Board is basically the standard that we have in Delaware, the way that it's been stood up and the work that it's been doing. Others are being implemented under different sort of auspices, under different ordinances in different ways. The people who follow this think this is probably the best one, yet, you know, it's still a very, very uphill battle because of the culture thing we talked about before.
Yep.
I was discouraged to see who was who Marcus Henry picked. Jamie Leonard is maybe one of the worst cops in the state. This is not you saying it. This is me. You told me not to say it, actually.
Yeah.
You said, "Do not say it." Kim did say. Jamie, Kim said, don't say it, because she doesn't believe it. I believe it, though, myself. I think so.
I'm excited to work with Jamie.
Yes, she actually was the first thing she said when she came in here. We didn't have the microphones on yet, you see. She was like, I'm excited to work with him. He's a nice guy. And I was like, who? No, that guy's terrible. He's the worst. She was like, why would you say that? You don't even really know him. And I was like, that's true. That's true. So we have a disagreement there.
It's the first one. I can't believe it.
I know. So that's fine, though. We can disagree on that. That's fine. The one question I did want to ask, because the one thing, or you know, in the basket of sort of things that a police accountability board can do and is mandated to do, is an annual report.
Yes.
And it would sort of catalog what work's being done, maybe what work should be done, mm-hmm. a vision for next year. I mean, I was let down at the beginning because I understood that, unlike it took some people a little bit longer to understand, that you did not have independent investigatory or subpoena power or anything mm-hmm. like that. And so, you know, I think people who thought that was going to happen were just getting ready to be let down because they didn't understand how it was going to work. Mm-hmm. But I think that if you're honest and the board says, hey, we've tried to do these things for these reasons, these are the obstacles we faced. We still were able to write bylaws. We still were able to get the ball rolling on feedback. We were still able to have these other committees meeting, you know, three different committees, subcommittees of the, you know, of that. And we were able to have public forums. Mm-hmm. Vibrant public forums.
Very.
So I think that that's people will understand that. Now, will they be let down or disappointed? Maybe. But I think if it's not a bunch of bullshit, if it's not blowing smoke, if it's like, these are our challenges, this is what we're trying to do to face them, I think that's great. May I offer one suggestion?
You can. I may not take it.
You're definitely not going to take it. I already know. No, I do think, I'll phrase it sort of in a different way, maybe a more like sort of intellectual way. I'm big on sort of calling out what's going on. I don't think, for example, just say it, I don't think that the police as a organization or as a system in general are partners in this work. Their obstructions to it because they don't want to change. We should know that from the last 4 years of task forces and Leo Bores and all of that stuff. And I think that the quicker we're able to call that out and do what we need to do to marginalize that, whether, you know, through legal, you know, whatever legal means we can to get data, for example, this is something you're working on, mm-hmm. or, I think that's the perfect example. Or try to get, maybe not at the Police Accountability Board level or at some other state level, real civilian independent investigatory oversight.
Mm-hmm.
I have some ideas about that. But I think if you're clear about what the dichotomy is, mm-hmm. what game is going on, I think people would appreciate that too. Now, again, I don't know how one would do that in a... outside of the podcast studio to not hurt people's feelings, because, you know, our large adult sons and daughters get their feelings hurt very often. They're always get their feelings. Everybody else gets their brains hurt. They get their feelings hurt. It's very weird. So, I don't know how one would go about doing that or how the board would go about doing that without, you know, making people cry. But I think it is important to mention, at least from my view, somebody who follows this and you're engulfed in it every day on different fronts. I don't know if the police are our partner because of the cultural thing you mentioned.
Well, I will challenge it a little bit. I don't disagree. And even though I said earlier that I didn't go into this with lofty ideas of a lot of change, I am still one with a great amount of hope. And that's part of, I couldn't do my job if I didn't have hope. And I know what is being said. And after we get past what's being said, we need to see what the actions are. And so I am being told by many in the Newcastle County Police Department that they are excited to work with us and that they really want to work with us. And so I'm like, you know what? Let's test that. I believe strongly that we can get there, like I said, or else I wouldn't be in this position. I'm not here to try to make anybody look bad or to try to challenge the status quo for the sake of challenging the status quo.
That's my job, too. You can't take
correct.
That job.
I'm I have not taking
that.
Your job,
I got
Rob.
The, I got the market cornered on
you
that.
Do, so
you
agree.
Watch yourself on that.
But I think the way we get there, and this is the truth about Friendship House, it's the relationships. And it's building trust so that we can be a little vulnerable and be honest and transparent. And do I believe that the police forces are capable of that? I do. Do I believe that's going to take work and trust in themselves and a little breakdown of culture? I do. But I'm not going to stop working towards that. And I do believe they want to work with us. The challenge is that they're willing to do the work we're asking them to do. And that's yet to be seen.
Yeah. And I guess it just comes back, like every conversation in Tucson at the Nicole Conference came back to
yes.
culture.
It does.
And I don't know whether, well, we'll see. I think it's totally fair. The board at Newcastle County hasn't even had a year. I know I think the first one was in April.
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, you have to give it time to sort of like find the place it's going to sit in and what it can do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually happy with it. It's funny.
Wait, what'd you say?
Yeah, I know.
I'm glad this is being recorded.
I know. I'm going to break character here a little bit. The most important thing that can happen is for all of these arguments to be held in public and put them on the internet, Zoom, everything.
Yeah.
Like I had a famous tête-à-tête with another member of the McBride family. We were very familiar with that. But there also was a full and it's online. I have to say, it's very well edited online. The big meeting that happened at the Route 9 Library, that was the first meeting after the incident on Route 40. Kaylin made a nice video out of it. And I think it's important that those conversations are recorded and happen in public. And even if you don't have independent investigatory or subpoena power, you know, you can convene these things and we can yell at some people. That helps. I mean, I actually know that it helps a little bit, because I know that, we'll just say, sometimes after particularly pointed outbursts from me in public, I hear afterwards from my spies all within the system, all underground, overground, all that. I hear that it gets brought up later on about how I was mean, or I made them feel sad, or they're confused. They don't know who I am. They don't like me. All of that stuff. They know who I am. And so the idea that I have another forum to do this in public is something that I enjoy. And I know that I have to be managed, we'll just say.
Yes, I learned that early.
I know I have to be. I'm looking to be managed.
No,
I need to be. I need to be put in my place.
Doesn't mean you have to like it.
No, it was, the one at Leisure Elementary was very funny. I think I told the story before. I kind of got into it at a Know Your Rights session that Misty was having with the guy at Public Trust, Dan McBride, because I didn't like what he was saying, and he kept saying it, and it sounded stupid. And so I said it sounded stupid, and I wanted him removed. And then, then we had to go back to regular order. Mm-hmm. Then I had to be recognized to speak. I couldn't say anything.
Yeah.
It was incredible.
And I declared no name calling then.
Oh, that's right. Yes. What did I call him? I forget what I called him.
I don't think I can say it in public.
Oh, was it the F word?
It might have been.
Oh, nice. I forget. See, sometimes I get into I'm in it, and I just have to do it. So I forget. I mean, he was saying some weird stuff.
You both were.
Okay, fair enough. My stuff was funnier, though. You have to say that. You have
yes,
to admit that.
No, I think
you have
hilarious.
To at least admit that. My bit was funnier than his bit.
Yeah.
Okay.
If I wasn't chair, I probably would have stayed back, but I had a responsibility.
I told you afterwards. I understood.
I appreciated that.
You had to.
It was heartfelt.
Yeah, no, I really did. I'm not even, again, I'm breaking character again.
I have that habit.
No, I know where my lane is, but I also know where everybody else's is, so. Like, yeah, that's the whole point of it. The point is that I start the thing, and then you have to stand up and, like, make a, rule of parliamentary procedure or some bullshit.
Right.
Like, that's part of it.
It is, unfortunately.
Hey, look, everybody's got to do something.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're part of the bit. I'm trying to tell you that what you didn't know when you signed up for this Newcastle County Police Accountability Board, now you're part of the bit.
Oh, Rob, there's so many things I didn't know when I signed up for the Newcastle County Police Accountability Board. And there was even less that I knew when I took on this chair.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Do I regret it? Absolutely not. Am I learning? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, before we go, I want to give a shout out to Al Mazzetti at the Delaware Liberal blog, or as Bill calls it, Delaware Liberal. Get it? around the time that Przicki's response was publicized, or pieces of it were editorialized about, and our podcast last week with Patrick Burke came out, there's been a little drive there to donate to the Friendship House. And I'm going to endorse that drive right now. Please donate to the Friendship House.
Thank you.
We're going to have a link on this post that you can click on very easily. One click. Ping, it'll take you right to where you have to go. This is something, even though Carl's not here, he knows what to do.
Amazing.
He'll put that link right in there. Yeah, I think not only is that important, but prepping for this and like thinking of all the stuff that you're doing, I was thinking like, well, this Kim, she's really doing it all right now. I know that you also put together a panel discussion at the mm-hmm. Westminster Presbyterian Church.
Yeah, that was fun.
That I attended. That was great.
Yes, it was.
That
good.
There was a lot of people there.
Yes,
that was incredible. It was like a Sunday night, and 100 people turned out.
It was a Saturday afternoon, even
Saturday
worse.
Afternoon.
I know.
Oh wow, I couldn't say anything. The weekend is just the weekend to me.
I
couldn't
know.
Remember when it was.
No, it was really good. And yes, please, if you're willing, follow us along. We're on all the different social media sites, and we have our website is friendshiphousede.org. But we are completely dependent on the community for support, both financially and volunteers, the whole thing. So even though we do have a paid staff, we are very dependent on the community for support.
Yeah, and also remember that you can also yell at your legislators and your political leaders for not doing more and making Kim do 18 jobs. That would be also very helpful.
Yes. Advocate for positive change, please.
Hey, or negative change. Whatever.
Negative change.
Or advocate negatively for positive change.
There you go. I think
I just came up with a thing, another bit.
I got your slogan.
Folks, thank you. I do want to mention right at the end here, we do have some more stuff planned for this story. We have a new Christmas gift here, a nice portable recorder that we're going to go out and start talking to people who have been impacted by the sweeps.
Nice.
We're going to start talking to people who, if they're, again, we're, it's a very sort of, I don't want to be looked like that we're sort of like sensationalizing anything or using like people's stories. I'm very sensitive to that.
Yeah, we are too.
And so like I've been talking to a few different people that Pastor Burke has gotten me sort of in touch with and a few other people in the neighborhood and a few groups that have Food Not Bombs, big shout out to them. They've really helped with the transition of the people who were affected by the sweep. So shout out to them. But yeah, I don't want to ever look like I'm using somebody's story for any other purpose than for a sincere purpose. And so I'm like, we've been talking about it and making other inroads and stuff. But yeah, we're going to go a little bit deeper and sort of follow up and see, you know, some of these folks have been in temporary housing, some waiting for permanent housing, that kind of stuff. So I want to kind of see where that goes. So we're going to continue this in January with a bunch of follow-ups, so that we can once again see, how the system works or does not work. And you know, keep following this. I think housing first is a huge thing. I've said before that, when Jeremy Corbyn was the labor leader in Britain and he was running, and we all were disappointed by his loss. You can go listen to Carl and I talk about that from 4 years ago or whatever. He was asked if he could do one thing he could accomplish as prime minister if it was only one thing. And he said, end homelessness. Mm. Because it's one of the tenets of just sort of your, of a human life.
Yep.
And so that always stuck with me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is probably one of the most important things that anybody's working on. So, Kim, I really appreciate you coming out and talking about it.
I really appreciate you. Thank you very much. And I'm glad that you're taking this on as an issue because it is critical and people are dying unnecessarily.
Yeah, I think that's it. It's like it actually makes me realize why some people are so eager to get it swept away from there so they can ignore it.
Yeah.
Because it is heart-wrenching. You see our society's failure, your failure, my failure, all of us,
yes,
right in your face.
That's right. And I think that's the thing that people tend to not understand about homelessness. It's not the person's fault. It is the system that has let them down. And I am more than happy to explain that on another podcast on what that means the next time I'm invited.
No, and I think we talk about that all the time. I mean, we cannot individualize any of this. This is a societal sort of issue.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about it with jails and prisons, too. It's very similar sort of dynamic going on. That's a failure. We've failed.
Yes.
And so we have to look at that stuff from a different perspective, but it's easier for people to dehumanize people, mm-hmm, whether they be unhoused and sleeping rough, in prison, whatever.
Because people are scared it'll happen to them. So they need to realize that to feel safe, they need to believe the person made a choice.
Yeah.
But in fact, it can happen to any one of us.
That's right. Well, thanks again.
Thank you.
And I think people know left is best.